Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 280 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. I'm Patrick, he's Justin, and spring training is here. Grapefruit League action is here, coming at you. It's very exciting. None of it really means anything, but it's fun to watch if you're into that sort of thing. Justin, did you watch the first Grapefruit League game?
I did not. I was watching Scotty's Tournament of Hearts prelim playoffs yesterday.
That's right.
So.
It's that time of year for the Scotties. Definitely more interesting than Grapefruit League action. But yeah, if you're thirsty for baseball, you've got something to watch now, which is nice.
I watched the highlights, and I'll watch more as it gets closer to the season, and it's more about getting starters like 3-4 innings instead of just 20 pitches.
Build them up.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that game that was yesterday between the Jays and the Phillies. Not a lot. There's just one topic I want to bring up. And then we've got a little bit of news and then something fun. It'll be the last thing we talk about. I don't want to spoil it, but it's going to be a spicy discussion, I think.
Ooh,
so wow. I'm looking forward to it. If you like what we do, you can find us. BFMDpodcast.com is the website. You can use that same thing to find our all of our other socials, whatever. I don't want to talk about it. Thanks for listening to the episode. We're really excited for the season to start. We will be doing a preview episode probably like 4 or 5 days before the season starts when the roster is solidified and all that. So that's my favorite episode we do every year. Because
we always make fools of ourselves, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm excited to do that again. I know that I have made some bullseye level precision calls over the last few years that I'm very proud of. But then around those very precise predictions is just like a field of...
Yeah, you know,
swings and misses.
You know how some days when you're playing Wii Sports bowling, you're just on it, and then other days you just keep throwing the ball backwards? That's kind of how our predictions go, one of two ways. We're either nailing strikes or we're throwing the ball backwards.
It's like sometimes you fire that game up and it's like you're on a heater, right? And then other times it's like you get that little message. Make sure to release the button.
See, I don't know why I thought of that for that analogy, but it just came to me in a dream, you know?
The bowling game. I was never good at the bowling game because I couldn't get the timing down.
Don't mess
with
me.
Also, it's like regular
golf,
bowling.
I'm an ace on that, too.
Yeah,
I'm like,
I can't be touched
in
golf.
Early 2000s Tiger Woods, like the best player of all time.
Okay,
can't handle me. Anyway. Let's get into the news.
I'm ready to roll. Let's talk about the big news, Justin.
The biggest news around baseball in the last 24 hours, outside of everyone being able to see players' dicks through their see-through pants, is Cody Bellinger signing a three-year deal with the Cubs. It's an $80 million deal over those 3 years. He does have opt-outs after each of the first two seasons, Patrick. So this year we'll pay him $30 million. The second year, if he stays, we'll pay him another $30 million. And then the third year, again, if he stays, is worth another $20 million. So it's not the 12-year, like $300 million deal that a lot of so-called experts were predicting as the offseason started. But it is a high dollar amount for a lower term. And it does give Bellinger the flexibility to obviously opt out if he does have another great year again this season. But I mean, for me, I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around guys being worth more than $30 million. You know, we're so used to contracts in the NHL where it's like the best player in the league is making like $10 million. Or if you're Sidney Crosby, you're getting paid like $3 million. And it's just like the proportion between the two sports is just, it's insane. Like how much more baseball players make.
It's not just them. The NBA season
NFL
and then
too.
It's really sort of exploded a little bit more in the NFL as well.
Yeah, and then you look at soccer contracts or Formula One drivers. Like I think Max Verstappen paid $100 million last year or something easily, and Lewis Hamilton's contract with Ferrari is going to be like $100 million base. Like it's insane, you know. Like, but I mean, $30 million is a lot of money. And for a guy in Bellinger who was coming off of three terrible years before last year, to get guaranteed at worst $80 million over the next 3 years. If it's the last 3 years he ever plays, like if he is absolutely terrible, like if he goes to Patrick Corbin levels of brutality, or you know, Stephen Strasburg and only pitches like 20 innings over his entire contract, he's still getting $80 million no matter what. So it could have been worse for him.
I'm ready to give a really spicy take on this. So for most of the offseason, we've been referring to the fact that Chapman, Bellinger have the same agent, and we've been kind of dunking a little bit on Scott Boras. But this is, looking at this contract and the way that it's set up and the amount of money, this is an absolute W for Cody Bellinger and, by extension, Scott Boras. Yeah, this is as good as anybody could have asked for from the perspective of the player. I doubt he's going to opt out of a $30 million contract. I don't see how he could have a season better than what he already had. I mean, if he does, that's fantastic. But, I mean, for those of you disappointed the Jays weren't able to match or whatever, realistically, the Jays probably weren't even that interested in Bellinger. I mean, he would have fit some of the organizational needs, but the price and the fact that he is extremely high risk for regression is enough to say maybe we'll pass.
Right.
So those of you who are like, oh man, why didn't the Jays match that? They totally could have had Cody Bellinger. Well, they might not have even been interested in the start. And it was really only us, the fans, with our Rinky Dink podcast saying like, oh yeah, go get, like, Bellinger fits all these needs. Not getting him would be a failure.
Look, I mean,
yeah,
you're right. Getting him at the beginning of the offseason would have made a lot of sense, but then obviously bringing back Kevin Kiermaier really it made the outfield crowded between Varsho, Springer, and Kiermaier. And then obviously signing Justin Turner, it took away the flexibility of the DH spot, because that's where Turner's going to be most of the time, right? So, I mean, Bellinger would have been a great guy to rotate into the outfield with those four guys to get Springer a day at DH, you know? Or if there's Bellinger, Kiermaier, and Varsho all hit left-handed. So, I mean, if you're facing lefty starter, you don't want three lefties in your lineup. So you sit one of them and you put the guys in who have maybe the better historical stats against that lefty, you know? Like, it would have given them flexibility before the Justin Turner acquisition. Still, it would have made sense, but after that one, it made no sense. So, that was it. That's all I got.
Yep. But it does sort of lead to something that's kind of semi-adjacent to the interest of the Jays team, and
yep,
where you'll see this deal, and it's pretty obvious where Grapefruit League is starting that, you know, there is an increasing amount of urgency when it comes to signing a player or a player wanting to be signed. So I expect that Matt Chapman will not have to wait that much longer before he is signed by another team. I will say right now the odds are in favor of the Mariners, which is bewildering. And the Jays would be second and the Giants would be third. I think it's either going to be the Jays or the Giants. And the Giants, it's weird, they have been rejected by other free agents this offseason, and they also dealt Ross Stripling. So I don't know. I'm very confused about what the Giants are trying to do. And I don't know. What do you think? Do you think there's a chance that Chapman returns to the Jays?
Yeah, there's definitely a chance. There's been people saying that the Jays have been in contact with him for the majority of the off season. I think there's definitely an interest on the Jays side of things. And I think for Chapman, I mean, he knows the Jays have a need, so I think that definitely leads to some sort of mutual interest between the two. I mean, they've got a need, they've got the money to pay for it. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where he does sign and what the term is. you got to think that, yeah, like for those remaining Boris clients, like Snell and Montgomery, along with Chapman, they're likely going to have to settle for something similar at this point. Because, I mean, if you don't settle, maybe you just don't play baseball this year. And what's worse, not getting a contract or not playing baseball, you know?
Not playing is brutal for whoever is still available.
None of these guys are going to sit out. I mean, they're all in the prime age of their careers. They're in their early 30s or late 20s. And they need to make money while they're still healthy, you know? So, I mean, they're gonna sign. It's just a matter of what they settle for. Or maybe the matter of where they settle to, you know, it's going to matter to them. I think that's probably part of the issue is they all would like to play for a contender. And I mean, the Cubs are maybe going to contend this year. They were close last year. They've got some good young talent coming up.
Like win the division maybe, but contend from the World Series. Exactly. Certainly not. So.
And I mean, I think players look at teams in that regard too. Or I mean, obviously, a lot of guys went to LA after the Shohei deal because Shohei deferred a lot of money and gave the Dodgers flexibility to bring in more guys. And I think a lot of people who are, you know, chasing that ring, kind of in the mid to later part of their career, are attracted by teams who are contending. You know, so I mean, for Matt Chapman, for Blake Snell, for Jordan Montgomery, that's going to be a consideration as well. So. There obviously has to be mutual interest. You can't just go to a team and say, "Hey, I want to sign here." if they're not interested, they're not going to offer you a deal. So that's probably part of the issue right now these guys are facing.
Yep. Let's move on. Let's talk about grapefruit a little bit.
I hate the fruit, honestly. I'm more of an orange guy.
Yeah, oranges are better. Yeah. Lemon is the most versatile of the citrus fruit, though, as far as cooking. But anyway, yesterday's game at TD Ballpark was sold out.
What's the attendance at that park now? I can't remember.
7,631.
Nice.
It was the largest ever crowd at TD Ballpark.
Good. I love
that. It's a sellout.
Good.
I'd
love to be in Florida watching baseball right now. You know?
I know. That came from Caitlin McGrath, who's a fantastic writer. And journalist. That was awesome. And the game was kind of interesting. It was a 14-13 loss for the Jays to the Phillies.
I thought it was baseball, not football.
Yeah, I know. These are weird scores. But anyway, the only thing I wanted to talk about that game, because there's really nothing, you can't really get anything
out of
from
three at-bats.
really from anything at all. What I really want to bring up is just the fact that the Jays had two pitchers that you would think would have been competing for a roster spot if there was one open. We're not good. Nate Pearson through 0.2 innings, gave up 4 hits and 4 earned runs, walk and a strikeout. Not the best start to the spring, but of course, not to be outdone. Yasver Zulueta through 2/3 of an inning, gave up 6 hits, 6 earned runs, 1 walk and 1 strikeout. Neither of these two guys had the inside track to make this team, but you got to think that after a performance like that, you're already thinking about what can be done to make the adjustments needed so that way your spot is safe in Buffalo. Like, those guys are going to make Buffalo, but, like, that is a rough start to the spring. That's not good.
It's not ideal.
No. And if it was one of the Jays regulars who that or somebody expected to make the roster had that experience, we'd be talking about it. A lot more, but it just kind of sucks for them. But Buffalo spring training is a little bit longer, if I recall correctly. They start games a little bit later than the show, so plenty of time for those guys to make the adjustments. And I feel bad for Nate. That's not a good look.
I mean, are we worried about one spring training game?
No.
Okay.
Okay. That's all I wanted to say about the game. By the way, the
Bisons is also started on March 29th, so the season's lineup. AAA season now lines up with Major League Baseball. So.
Oh, it never used to. But
it never. It always used to start later. Yeah, they used to be shorter seasons, but they've now that the roster expansion doesn't go to the full 40 man in September anymore in the major leagues, they've stretched out the AAA season a bit more. So.
Okay. All right. There you go. I learned something new today. Yeah. Cool. Okay.
That's what I'm here for. I'm always here to fact check you, you know. Just trying to keep you in your place. I can't let you get too high up, you know.
Exactly. You gotta take me down a little bit.
Yeah. Gotta keep you grounded.
Let's get to the main event. This is the entree. I'm very excited to talk about this. So Justin, you're running the show today. I know nothing about what you're about to do. So yeah, lay it on me. What do you got?
Okay, so when people started talking about the Nate Pearson and Yosver Zulueta thing yesterday, I got curious, you know. I was like, you know what, people are putting a lot of weight into this, and I mean, I get people are hungry for baseball. I am too, but I mean, we've got to also remember that this is literally the first game of spring training, and we've all talked before about, you know, we can't overreact about spring training baseball, and then the first thing we do, we overreact. So I thought to myself, what kind of experiment can we run, or what kind of, you know, thought exercise could we do here? And I said, let's do a bullpen power rankings, and let's base it off of our current level of trust, confidence, personal feelings on which relievers we think the Blue Jays are the best. You know, like, I'm not saying I want to say like, oh, you know, Tim Mesa should be the closer. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, And no matter what the situation is, who do you trust the most to come in and get you out of a jam? You know, what's your level of confidence? So I figured we'd do 11 spots. That gives us 8, you know, guys that we'd say, you know what, if these 8 guys were in the bullpen, I'd be pretty confident in an MLB bullpen. And then 3 extra spots for, you know, the rotating long man. Gives us room to put in guys like Yariel Rodriguez, who we've never seen yet on the big league mound. And even guys like, you know, the Nate Pearsons, the Zach Pops, the Mitch Whites, those guys who are competing for that last spot. So I think we'll start at the bottom, Patrick. You want to go first with your number 11, or you want me to go first?
You go first, because I mean, again, I didn't know very much or anything about what we were going to do. So I'm kind of trying to pivot to take a look at the 11 guys that I'm going to use on this list. So
okay.
You go first.
Sure.
I already know who my number 11 is.
Okay,
so
we'll start with that then. All right, my number 11 is Mitch White. I've got him back in my 11 because of the way he finished the AAA season last year. We've talked about this on previous episodes very recently about how well Mitch White did down in Buffalo in September, and he pitched his way back on to the point where the Jays had to add him back to the 40-man roster or risk losing him in the Rule 5 draft this offseason. He's done enough within the organization where they're like, you know what, this guy could still contribute for us at the major league level, and we don't want to lose him. I liked the strikeout numbers and the velocity in AAA. I hope that going forward they focus more on Mitch White as, say, a 3 innings max guy, like a once through the order, instead of trying to make him like a 4 or 5 innings starter. I'd like to see him ramp up the velo and just pitch hard for 1 to 3 innings. And he can be used in that long man role or in blowout games, whether it's the Jays doing the blowing out or being blown out. But I've got him back in my top 11.
Interesting. So my number 11, I'm still trying to pivot. This is tough.
It is. It's not easy.
I don't know if Zach Pop makes my list or not.
I'll tell you, he's my number 10. If that makes you any easier. And the reason being is that I think that he's young. He still has an option left. So I like a bit of the flexibility there. And I like his sinker. I think it has potential to be good. The thing I'm concerned about with Zach Pop is the lack of strikeout ability. I think that is what's holding him back and what has held him back in the bigs. I mean, Fangraphs has him projected to pitch 34 innings this year in MLB and only have 29 strikeouts. And I mean, okay, for his career, if you look at his strikeout numbers, they're 7.5 per 9. And for relievers, you want them to be like over 9. And I mean, in the 13 innings he had last year at the Jays, it was 9.22, but the walks also crept up to almost 4, which is too many. So, and the home runs were bad. So, I mean, for me, I love the potential of Zach Pop, like an xFIP of 3.98, great, but the overall ERA was actually 6.59 last year just because he got rocked. So I think if the execution is there, he can be like the first guy called up if one of your like short relievers, your one inning guys, gets hurt, essentially, is why I put him in my top 10.
Yeah, I think I'm missing somebody and I can't figure out who it is. I'll tell you that Chad Green is not in my top 11.
What?
Right off the top.
You're a wild man.
Yep. So, all right.
Cool.
I'm missing a spot. I don't know who I'm missing.
Chad Green, probably.
I wish I had been more prepared for this, but I just wasn't.
It's okay. I literally made my list as we were preparing for the episode. So.
My number 11 is Trevor Richards.
Okay.
Here's the thing with Trevor Richards. He is incredibly good at striking guys out. In fact, I think he might have been the best of the relievers last year, or pretty close to it. He is not really... Oh, man, he threw 72 innings last year, which I think is way too high.
Remember, he also opened some games after
that's right, he did.
Too. So his role was very flexible last year.
His walk rate was not really that much better than the year before, and last year it was not good. It's been creeping. If he was still hurling at a K rate and a walk rate that he did in 2021, I'd have no notes. But the walk rate has crept up the last couple of years, and the K rate, the K rate's pretty good. It's just, I don't know what it is. It's the trust level just isn't as high. A 4.22 FIP last year. I'm not going to bother trying to like analyze him based off of what the projections are, because I don't know if that's fair. But my level of trust with Trevor Richards is, I would say, probably 11. I'd say he's probably the bottom just because the walk rate is just so high. And he had some real stinkers. He seems to be the type of pitcher who pitches better when he's got more outs to work with. I don't know what he's fixing to be, though, this year. I guess he would just be like...
regular, low leverage to medium leverage.
Yeah. But I would say he's my number 11 this year. I'll do my 10th, just because I have that spot.
Yep.
In eighth place, that I don't know who that's supposed to be, and maybe it'll end up being Chad Green, although I would prefer it not be. But anyway, my number 10 is Zach Pop.
Okay, so we agree on that.
I like Zach Pop. I am
great baseball name.
Great baseball name.
Looks like a ball player too.
Didn't really pitch very much for the Jays last year, and when he did, he was not very good. However, a healthy amount of experience in AAA will help him. He's only 27 years old. His birthday is at the end of September, so this is his age 27 year. Zach Pop still has options, so if it doesn't go well, he can always go back down for development. He's probably not going to make the main roster, but... he's a guy, he'll be like the second call-up, depending on what they do with Bowden Francis. And
yeah,
I just, he has the potential. Like, his 2022 was quite good. And I still think he has a ton of potential to be useful as a guy that comes in, you know, in the fourth, fifth, or sixth inning. If the team is either up by a lot or down by a lot.
Right.
You know what I mean? That kind of role of like, it's not a high pressure situation, but he, I don't know what it is about him that makes me trust him over Trevor Richards more. I think it's just the potential upside that he has. And I'm kind of looking more at what he did in 2022 rather than 2023, because it's such a small sample size. 13.2 innings pitched is nothing. You give up a home run and your numbers are kind of frigged, right? I mean, yeah, I trust him more, I think, than Trevor Richards.
Okay.
Yeah, no, and spicy. It's a little spicy. Who's your number 10?
My number 10 was Zach Pop as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Who do you have at 9?
My number 9 is Mitch White. Okay. Mitch White's conclusion to the 2023 season in AAA indicates quite a bit of development in terms of his stuff. He was not particularly good at all in 2023 for the big club. But again, it's a very small sample size, similar to Zach Pop.
Yeah.
And it's hard to kind of judge an entire season based off of 12.2 innings pitched. If you recall, you know, the first 12.2 innings pitched for Alek Manoah weren't really that bad, but then
they weren't great, but they weren't awful. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he gave up a lot of runs. His FIP last year was 4.91 for that limited innings, but his time in Buffalo obviously served him quite well. I thought he looked much better by the end of the season, and I'm very excited to see whether or not he makes the 26 man. He has no options left, so the team has to make a decision on whether or not they're going to see if they can sneak him through waivers, which he won't clear because he was just that good last year at the end of the season for Buffalo. So
yeah,
I think Mitch White makes this club out of necessity, and that's going to hurt one of two guys who are actually higher on my trust list, but not by much. I've now figured out where my gap is on this list. So
yeah, here, just for the Mitch White thing, I'll cherry pick the September numbers, which was 4 starts for him, Patrick, in Buffalo. 21 and a third innings, 1.69 ERA, 12 hits allowed over those innings, 1 home run, 4 earned runs, 9 walks, but 30 strikeouts. Mitch White struck out 19 batters his last 2 starts combined against the New York and Baltimore AAA affiliates, both who had some highly touted prospects on them, especially the Baltimore one, with Jackson Holliday being there, among others. But, I mean, it's definitely 4 games. It's small, still a small sample size. But, I mean, if you're going to average close to 6 innings per start in AAA, that's still pretty good. It's like 5 and a third about that he averaged there. Exactly 5 and a third, actually. But, I mean, that's still more than I think Mitch White will be on a big league team. But having that rebound, and I think it's a bit of a change in philosophy where he decided he was just going to start striking people out, is definitely a good idea for him. So my number 9 is Bowden Francis. I like Bowden Francis because he provides you with a similar kind of use case to Mitch White, where they could be used as starters. I view Bowden Francis as a better starter than Mitch White at this point.
And oh, I also view
Bowden Francis as a better long man option than Mitch White, which is why I ranked him ahead of Mitch White in this thought experiment here. So I like Bowden Francis, and he was one of the guys that I was actually very impressed by last year.
Yep.
And
same.
I would like to see more of him as a starter, which is why I think he'll start the season in AAA in that kind of role. I would not be mad if he started the season in the big league bullpen as the long man. But I also want him to get regular work, and I do think that he is the type of guy who could pitch deeper into games than Mitch White. I'm not sure why I feel that. I just have a bit more confidence, which is why I ranked him higher than I do with Mitch White, because of the fact that Bowden Francis's walk numbers improved so much last year over where they had been.
Oh God, yeah, tremendously so.
He did give up quite a few home runs in AAA, even though it was 27 innings, but it was 2 home runs per 9 versus 1.24 in the big leagues in 36 innings. Manny, of course, is a reliever, or only as a reliever. But I do like the fact that he actually pitched quite well. He struck out a lot of batters last year, which is good. I think that he has that ability to pitch a bit deeper. I mean, you look at his innings counts. There's a couple times where he went three and two thirds, even a four inning outing for the Jays when they were at home against San Fran last June. So he has that ability, I think, to be a bit more reliable over a long stint than Mitch White does. I think Mitch is a guy that other teams will figure out a bit faster. I just think Bowden has a bit more swing and miss, yeah, which I like. So that's why I put him ahead of Mitch White. I do view them in like this exact same type of usage role, but I have a bit more confidence in Bowden Francis.
So I will say that Bowden Francis is also on my list, but I'm telling you now, he's not my eighth pick.
Okay.
So I realize now what my error is, and you were correct. My eighth pick, so I still see him as making the bullpen, is Chad Green. And the reason why is just extremely small sample size and coming off of a major injury.
Fair enough.
That's it. That's all I have. That's all it is.
It'll be a big spring for him. I'd be curious to see how he rebounds after a full healthy offseason where he's able to work.
I mean, in 12 innings pitched, he accumulated more F-war than Bowden Francis did in 36 innings. So that's more reflective, I think, of the quality of pitcher that Chad Green is. It's just he's only pitched 27 innings in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
That's concerning.
It's definitely something, yeah, to be worried about.
I don't think he'll pitch 83.2 innings the same way he did for the Yankees in 2021. If that's the case, then he must fix to be the highest of leverage, or a guy who throws more than one inning at a time. The Jays really have to stop overusing their highest level leverage guys. Because you saw it with Eric Swanson last year. I think he was overused.
Yeah, he had to spend some time in the IL for some fatigue, of course. Yeah.
I think Jordan Romano is partially overused. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the other guys that were from last year. But Chad Green, for me, I think it's just the lack of time in a Jays uniform seeing him pitch, where there's just the trust level's not very high. I don't think he's a bad pitcher at all. I think he had a bad year last year, but the underlying metrics say he's as good as he was before, and I acknowledge that. I have him making the team. I don't think the order really matters after eight, but we'll talk about all of them. But that's where Chad Green is for me. My number seven pick is Bowden Francis, and the reason why is because I see Bowden Francis as very, very similar to another Toronto Blue Jays pitcher that came through the system a number of years ago, who ended up being a key piece to the success when they made the playoffs. And that's Aaron Sanchez. And I see what they're doing with Bowden Francis, and it kind of feels like it's the same, where starting him off in the pen, getting him a chance to face MLB pitchers, and when the time comes and it's appropriate, he can start. I want Bowden Francis to be on this main roster from the start. I think he earned it. Look at his numbers last year. He blew the projections out of the water. He had a 1.73 ERA with a 3.86 FIP in 36.1 innings pitched. He's good.
Yeah.
He's good enough to be an MLB pitcher. I don't know how you make sure that he gets meaningful innings, but not everybody is going to be healthy the entire year. And Bowden Francis, I think, is going to be a key piece to, you know, the equation of how do we fill in the gaps. And by having Bowden Francis in my top eight, that means that somebody is not going to make this team who has no options. So I'm curious as to what you have to say about me making the call for Bowden Francis to stay and then potentially losing Mitch White and Trevor Richards.
The reason that I do have Bowden Francis ranked above Mitch White, but I do think that it's really between those two, I think, for that eighth bullpen spot. If they are intent, and I'll say why in a second. Trevor Richards is my number eighth I won't go into any more detail because we've already discussed him. My number seven is Yariel Rodriguez. And the reason that I'm hesitant to decide on which of those three guys between Rodriguez, Francis, and White earns the long man spot is it comes down to how the Jays want to utilize these guys this year. If they are truly going to give Yariel Rodriguez a chance to start, he has to outperform Alek Manoah by a lot in spring training in order to like break camp with the team. And I don't know if it's going to happen. And I mean, I don't know if the Jays want to start Rodriguez in Major League Baseball or if they want to get him, say, a month or two of every 5 days in AAA to really see how he adjusts to a starter's workload. He didn't pitch last year, right? He took the whole season off. So for him, it doesn't simulated games, whatever he was doing all year last year to build himself up. It's not the same as the pressure and like the impact of a Major League Baseball game. You can't simulate real situations in that sense when you've got 30,000 fans, the pressure of loot being in a tight game, whatever, runners on base. It's tough to simulate that in a controlled setting. So I have Rodriguez at seven just based on his repertoire and the potential that he has. Do I think he's going to make the bullpen or make the Major League roster at the end of spring training? No. I think that they will start him in AAA because they want to give him a chance to be a starter. Do I think the Jays will risk losing Mitch White? He'll have to pitch really poorly in spring training for that to happen. I think if Mitch White has a poor spring training, there will be zero hesitation to expose him to waivers, especially if Bowden Francis pitches better than him. But for me, it comes down to these three guys for that last 26-man pitching spot, the 13th pitching spot. And I don't know how aggressive the Jays are going to be. I want them to be super aggressive. I want them to take whoever out of those three gives them the best chance to win Major League Baseball games. I would like that guy to be on the roster. If it's Mitch White, I'm in 100%. If it's not, I'm also in 100%. If it's Bowden Francis, if it's Rodriguez, I don't care. I want this team to win games. We can't have a situation like we had last year with Mitch White making the team because of the fact that he had no options, or when they kept Derek freaking Fisher around a few seasons ago or 2 years ago, whenever it was at this point, because he had no options. This is a team who is in a tremendous under a tremendous amount of pressure to perform better than they have in the past 5-6 years now, say the past 3 years since they've been very good at making playoffs. They have a lot of pressure on them, and they need to start winning, and they have to take the best guy available out of those three for the eighth bullpen spot. So that's my logic around it. I view Rodriguez as the better of the three pitchers, the higher potential of these three guys, I would say, long term, just given his velocity, his pedigree of, you know, pitching for the Cuban national team. He's been exposed to a lot of pressure. He's been a closer and a late innings reliever in Japan. He has a bit more, I would say, big game experience than these guys do. And I think that with a bit of refinement and with him getting acclimated to the Major League lifestyle, I think he has the potential to be way better than those other two guys. So that's why I put him higher.
Yeah, and I get you. Since I have Bowden Francis at seven, that means Yariel Rodriguez is number six for me.
Okay.
For the same reasons that you just kind of described, but I also think that he, I don't see how he doesn't make this team. I guess if he's not starting and the team is adamant about him starting, but that means you're paying him $8 million to pitch in Buffalo this year.
Right.
That's
a lot.
Weird. where, you know, you have an obvious massive gap at third base and you're paying $0 to Matt Chapman to come back and give you that, you know, at least defensive consistency, but you're paying Yariel Rodriguez $8 million to hang out in fucking Buffalo. I don't know. That'd be weird. I don't see how Yariel Rodriguez does not make this team. Do I think he starts off as high leverage? No, but they got to get him some innings. I don't know. It's complex. I think it's okay. At this point, the team should be aggressive and not feel obligated to hold on to players that, you know, don't have any options. Losing Mitch White for nothing is not going to destroy this team. Same with Trevor Richards, I would argue. I don't think it destroys this team. I don't even think it costs the team a win at any point in a season. But I think at some point you got to make aggressive but risky decisions. And you could argue that's what they're doing with third base.
Very risky.
Very risky.
I wouldn't
say
it's aggressive. I'd say it's just risky.
It is super risky. But, I mean, at this point, the team has zero playoff wins during its, quote, window.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think decisions have already been made behind the scenes. And I think Yariel Rodriguez makes this bullpen. And I think he is probably going to be more likely to be the long man or the replacement starter, even if Bowden Francis is fixing to be the guy who fills the rotation spot next year when Kikuchi probably doesn't come back. I don't know. This is actually one of the positives of this team, where there's so much flexibility with Rodriguez and Francis. And, you know, I guess way down the line, Mitch White and Zach Pop.
Yeah.
Because they have the ability to pitch more than two or three innings at a time. The question just becomes, like, what do these guys become? They're all young enough that you can make that decision. And again, I just see Trevor Richards as the odd man out. Maybe it's just like I have some sort of bias towards him that I can't quite figure out. But I have Yariel Rodriguez as sixth on my depth, and he makes this team because it would be weird if he didn't.
Okay. Yeah. For me, my number six is Yenesis Cabrera.
okay.
I like this guy. I was very pleasantly surprised with what he did after the trade from St. Louis last year.
Oh, hell yes.
I was not a fan of bringing him over. I didn't think his numbers were that good, but obviously the Blue Jays, Pete Walker, the analytics, whoever saw something in him knew what they were doing when they brought him over. And whether or not that same, prowess or whatever you would call it, carries over to this season remains to be seen. But at the very least, he has put himself in a position where he takes a lot of pressure off of Tim Meza, who was the only lefty in the bullpen for most of last season.
Yeah.
And he pitched incredibly well for Toronto. I know, you know what I mean? Like he came over, his strikeout numbers went down, but so did the walks and the home runs allowed. They got him to
way
pitch
down
a lot more to contact, which was great.
Yep.
He gave up a lot fewer fly balls, which obviously leads to fewer home runs. But even just looking at the underlying numbers, I mean, his xFIP was still, it was higher with the Jays than it was with the Cardinals, and that's because xFIP takes into account a league average home run rate, which he fell well below. But his FIP was 368 compared to 501 with St. Louis. So even just looking at that, where FIP doesn't really look at league average numbers, it looks at what in reality happened, not the expected. I liked what he brought to the table, and I think that he has pitched himself into the situation where putting him at number six out of an 8-man bullpen essentially doesn't look that bad anymore, you know? If I had to pick an 8-man bullpen right now, yeah, he'd be my number six guy. My top six are all guys I want in the bullpen for sure.
Yep.
But I don't feel bad about it. I don't look at this bullpen and say like, oh shit, we've got to put Yenesis Cabrera in here. This that you just mentioned, like the Jays have an incredible amount of flexibility and pitching depth that has been not seen in a long time. So, I've got nothing really more to say on Yenesis Cabrera other than the fact that what he did last year, similar to what Mitch White did at the end of the season, Mitch White pitched himself back onto the team. Cabrera kept himself on the team for this year, and I'm looking forward to seeing him again.
Yeah, no, it was a great trade that was made.
And he still
has
an option, so if it goes shitty, you can send him down.
That's exactly what my reasoning would be, and I have him at five.
Okay.
On my list, just because you can see where this is going.
Yeah.
Where a lot of my guys are one ahead of yours, but my number five is Yenesis Cabrera, for the reasons you've already said, and worst case scenario, if it doesn't go well, he has an option and he immediately goes down, and there's enough guys on this list that just can slot right in. Where Mitch White doesn't have options, Trevor Richards doesn't have options. My list kind of necessitates, you know, those guys going away, and it means that guys with options have to be the ones to replace. So I think my setup is a little bit more risky than yours, but there's something going on with me and Trevor Richards. I can't figure it out yet. And it's not, I don't hate him at all. It's just, I don't know what it is. I think it's the fact that he's high strikeout, but also high, everything goes wrong kind of thing. Like, it's all or nothing. That's the way I feel. But we're talking about Yenesis Cabrera. He's so young, and he's already logged quite a bit of experience for a reliever. I mean, he's been pitching in the big since 2019. And his peak is 70 innings in 2021, and that was a good year for him. And I think that he's not that far removed from being that good. In fact, last year when he was with Toronto, he was as good as what he was in 2021. So I think there's a lot of upside. And if it doesn't go well, it's like you said, he has an option. He goes down and somebody else pops right up, whether it's Zach Pop or Bowden Francis or Yariel Rodriguez or Mitch White, whoever. There's enough pitching depth on this club now where a young guy with options struggles, he just goes down.
Right.
Remember, Nate Pearson is still on this team too. And while he's not on either of our lists, he is a guy that can come up if somebody has to go down.
In a pinch, for sure.
Who's your five?
So it seems like we have a couple of fundamental disagreements here. One of them being Trevor Richards, one of them being Chad Green. I have Chad Green at my number five.
Okay.
And I have him there based on his track record.
Okay.
And
super reasonable.
Yeah, and from what we saw in like the later outings that he had last season. I mean, yeah, obviously his first outing was absolute shit. He gave up 4 runs right away. 3 of them were unearned, so it's somewhat not on him. But he only had one more what I would call blow up after that, where he gave up 3 runs. He had 5 appearances last year where he gave up runs out of his 12 games. 2 of them were a 3-run and a 4-run. Everything else was just 1. Only gave up 1 home run, too. That was in the 3-run blow-up game. And only walked 4 batters in those 12 appearances for 12 innings. I like that. That's 3 walks per 9 innings. Had 16 strikeouts for a 12 per 9 rate. I like those numbers. I can accept over a small sample size that the BABIP of 355 is likely going to drop. And I expect the left on base percentage at 41.1 to get somewhere back towards his 76% career average. And the BABIP of his career average is 281. So even if it's sitting at 300, it's still looking a lot better. So I'm looking past the 525 ERA, more that the deeper stats like the 267 FIP and the 324 XFIP with Chad Green. Mm-hmm. And I'm basing my pick here on the fact that I do believe that what we saw from him last year was not what we would see over a full season. So I'm looking a little bit further back into his Yankee years of 2021 and prior when I make when I make that ranking. So
very fair. I will say, just as sort of a in the moment kind of update, Bowden Francis did start today against the Yankees in Grapefruit, and he did get tagged.
Okay.
He's only pitched 1 inning so far, but he gave up 3 hits and 2 earned runs.
Yeah, it's what it is.
It is what it is. It's a rough start, but I still think that he is probably going
to
make this team.
I mean,
but
look at
we'll
gave up hits to Verdugo, Rizzo, and Judge. So I mean, I'll give the Yankees that one.
But it's a Yankees split squad too, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, fair enough.
But anyway, it doesn't matter. It's Grapefruit League, and it's the first of the year.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, nothing changes for me there. Just my last point on Chad Green. I kind of view him as the second Swiss Army knife that the Jays have behind Eric Swanson, because Eric Swanson, obviously, he can come in any situation. But I trust Chad Green over his career. His splits against both lefties and righties are both very good. Mm-hmm. So I kind of see him as that Swiss Army knife secondary to Eric Swanson. So
okay,
I'll say that as we go into the top four, I guess.
I think our top four are probably going to be the
pretty,
same.
I would say the same four
guys. Well,
there's
nobody missing.
We may have them in different orders, and I'm curious to see our reasonings behind
that. I don't
think
we will.
Let's go for it.
Well, we'll see. It's either, I think, 4 and 3 is probably where the difference is.
What do you have? Who do you have at 4?
Number 4, I have Jimmy Garcia.
Okay, same.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So, here's the thing. Last year, I was very concerned about Jimmy because his 2022, there were moments that were, I don't know what it is. There's nothing in the stats. He was actually worse last year than he was the year before, but for some reason I trust him more. I think it's because the K's came up and the walks went down. But he was still good last year. His ERA was a little bit higher than his FIP. His FIP was 3.39 and his ERA was 4.09. That's not terrible.
Yeah.
And he threw 66 innings. I don't think we see him throw 66 innings again this year. But I see him as the highest leverage of all the pitchers we've spoken about so far. He probably won't close any games, but if somebody gets injured, he's probably your closer. I would think, just because he has the ability to... He's more effective at strikeouts than the remaining three guys, not including Romano, because we're assuming Romano is injured in my scenario that I just made up. I see Jimmy Garcia as like the backup closer.
That's very interesting.
And I have him at 4.
Yeah, he is my number 4 as well too. I like everything that Jimmy brings to the table. He actually had his best season ever in terms of F4 last year. He's with a full win. It's tough for relievers to get to that point. And I mean, he pitched 66 innings in 73 games. He appeared in almost half of the Jays games last year, Patrick.
Yeah.
And
it's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
It's a
but
heavy workload.
I love the fact that he dropped the walks so drastically. That was a huge step forward for Jimmy last year. And also the fact that he had a career high ground ball percentage. We always love ground balls.
Yep.
And I mean, yeah, I can live with every number that he put up last year. If he did the exact same thing again, a 4.09 ERA for a reliever isn't bad. You know, they're not going to give up 4 earned runs every 9 innings. It's just there's a blow-up game here or there that inflates the numbers. So, I mean, a reliever with an ERA around 4 is a very good relief pitcher. And I've got no problems with him being, like you said, kind of in that kind of rotation for potential closing opportunities if they should arise, if the need should arise.
I'm so happy to talk about number 3.
I'm curious to know if we line up. So my number 3, Patrick, I actually have Jordan Romano here.
Oh wow, we do not line up at all.
I have
Jordan
Romano at number 3 in terms of my confidence level at any situation. I love Jordan Romano. He is the closer of this team.
Yep.
But I don't like I wouldn't want Jordan Romano to come in to a bases loaded nobody out jam. I like Jordan Romano coming in a clean inning, maybe with 2 outs and the bases loaded, sure. In the 8th inning where he does a 4 out save, whatever. But I don't like Jordan Romano coming in with a lot of guys on base. He has a very good left on base percentage, but that's mostly because the guys that are on base are mostly because of him at some point if he's walked them or given up a hit. Now, what concerned me last year about Romano was the fact that his walk rate increased almost a full walk over 2022.
Yep.
3.66 walks per 9 is still fine for a relief pitcher. There's nothing, don't get me wrong. I was also concerned a bit more about how the home run numbers ticked up as well. He went from 0.56 per 9 to just about 1. He went to 0.92, so almost doubled there. That was concerning for me a little bit. The velocity about the same, ticked down 0.2 miles per hour, but he did even say, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, that he worked all winter to make his delivery more like stable, consistent, because he knows that if his delivery is a little bit off, that's where he loses some velocity and some control. So I have full confidence in Romano as the closer. I just don't think that he is the guy I'm the most confident in on this team, which is why I put him at number 3. Love the guy. I want him to be the closer, but in terms of like coming in any situation, nope. I have 2 guys I'd rather have there.
The uptick in walks is probably the only thing that would stop me from having him at number 1.
Yep.
which I guess I just kind of spoiled it a little bit.
Who do you have at number three first?
I love number three. Let me tell you, this is my favorite Jay right now, period. and it's Tim Meza.
Isn't he the bat boy, though?
Yeah.
Nice. Anyway,
yes,
I was waiting for
last
that.
Year, as good as Tim Meza was in 2021 coming back off of major surgery,
yep,
and getting a degree, he was terrific in 2021. 2022, he was even better.
Yeah.
2023, he was even better. I think he is the best specialist reliever the Jays have ever had in
wow.
nearly 50 years of playing baseball. As a lefty, what? And I think he did get a little bit overworked last year.
Yep,
but
I agree.
Schneider, both Schneider and Charlie tend to keep Mays out a little bit longer than what he should be. But that's, anyway, we don't have to talk about it. There was a slight uptick in his walks last year, but there was a massive uptick in Ks per nine from 8.14 to 8.94, which means he's fooling guys with his stuff more. I love that. And the home runs went from 1.29 to 0.34. Left on base, 88.4%.
Love that.
He is 1.3 F4.
Yeah.
name a Toronto Blue Jays reliever who had more F4 last year than Tim Meza.
I don't think I can, Patrick.
Nope, you can't. He led the team.
Yep.
I love everything this man does. He is a high leverage at this point, and because he's a lefty, he's a specialist. He's still going to pitch in and around 50 innings. I do think he was slightly overused last year, 53 innings, but that seems to be where he's settling in. Whatever it is that he has locked into the last 2-3 years, I love it. And he still has, he's a free agent in 2026, so there's
another
still tons of time
this
on
year and next year left. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he has
yeah.
two MLB options as well. Not that that will happen, but Tim Meza is my favorite Toronto Blue Jay right now. His story alone.
Yeah, very cool.
Coming back off a major surgery to come back and be one of the most effective left-handed relievers in baseball, if not number one, is incredible. And, I mean, the man has a pretty sensational sense of humor to be willing to put his 4-10 fantasy league record on the back of a jersey and play.
I don't know if that was his choice. I think he had to do it. It's probably in the league agreement, but I like it. He went through with it. He didn't welch.
He didn't bitch about it. He's not embarrassed about it. He did
it. Nah, you gotta.
And everybody loves him for it. I think Tim Meza is my number three. If I had time to reconsider, he'd probably be number two, because my number two is Jordan Romano for the same reasons we've already discussed.
Yep.
Jordan Romano is the closer of this team. Jordan Romano has been a fantastic reliever over the last three seasons. The team has struggled to fill in that spot ever since what came out about the previous reliever. I don't want to talk about him or even name him by name, but anyway. Romano has slotted into that spot. There has been a downtick in his strikeouts and an uptick in his walks. I still see him as being one of the stronger relievers in baseball. At 1.2 F4 last year, a bit of a down year for him, but still 36 saves. 97 for his career. I love what he brings to this team. I love seeing him, you know, walk around in the pen like an absolute maniac waiting to get onto the field.
Animal.
Like a lunatic and a caged animal. I love that. I love the energy that he brings to this team, and I think he is going to be the closer, hopefully for a long time. He's a free agent the same time as Tim Meza. I don't see either of those two guys going anywhere. unless something wild happens or they both have like an implosion when it comes to their performance. But I think Romano brings a lot to this team. Energy is one of them. Personality is another. But most importantly, the metrics defend the fact that he deserves to be the closer. And Jordan Romano is my number two. Who's your number two?
My number two is Tim Mesa, Patrick.
Yes!
So
I love it.
I told you why I had Romano at three. It's because of the any situation thing. If I am Blue Jays manager John Schneider, I'm playing the New York Yankees. It's late September, Patrick. It's a must-win game. We're trying to close out the division title. And the Yankees have the bases loaded. They're down by two. It's top of the ninth. Two outs and Juan Soto's at the plate. I'm bringing in Tim Mesa. Tough lefty against a tough lefty. You know what? He's the guy that I'm bringing in to get me out of that jam. And
the metrics defend
love
that decision. The metrics heavily
defend that.
I'm
sure the analytics would love that call too. Yeah, if I've got Juan Soto up, I know the Yankees aren't pinch hitting for Juan Soto, so I'm going to my lefty with two outs. I don't care if Aaron Judge is on deck or Giancarlo Stanton, whoever the tough righty is behind.
It's a weird lineup you're projecting onto the Yankees, but okay.
Yeah, well, I think Soto's going to hit two and Judge is going to hit three for them.
That's weird.
Anyway,
that's weird to think, but yeah, that's
I
probably correct.
Soto's a better on base guy, so you want to get him on base for Judge, you know? So I'm saying,
yeah,
Judge is on deck. There's two outs. The bases are juiced. We're up by two or three runs. We can't afford to give up this slam. I'm bringing in my tough lefty to get their tough lefty out. And you know the Yankees aren't going to pitch hit for Juan Soto, so I'm going for it, even though I know I might have to face Aaron Judge if I give up a walk or something. But
yep.
I'm going for it. I'm going full
yep.
send. Love Tim Mesa. I won't go into any more into the stats because you've already covered all of that, but I've got him at number two. I guess
this
only
is basically
one name.
It's basically this is a Tim Mesa and Danny Jansen podcast. Like that's
yeah.
basically
if there were two Blue Jays we had to like give up our lives to run fan clubs for, it'd probably be those two guys.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I guess
number
one is not a mystery either.
The analytics so deeply defend your call there that
yeah.
it's kind of funny in a way. But I'm very excited for 2024 for both those guys. The number one on both of our lists is pretty obvious. It is Eric Swanson.
No, it's Nate Pearson. What are you talking about? I'm just kidding.
Now, what's interesting to me is that Eric Swanson actually had a down year last year, but his workload
yeah.
went up quite a bit.
Yeah, quite a lot.
He did have a couple of rough outings that were noticeable.
Yeah.
But
what reliever doesn't?
Yep. But still, Swanson was overused in the beginning and the middle of the season and
yep.
probably prevented the team from losing 2, 3, 4 games in that tough stretch where they
yeah,
just
look,
weren't getting any hitting.
We can talk about... Yeah, a couple of rough outings, but let's look at the down the stretch numbers, Patrick. August 1st to October 1st. That was for Eric Swanson, 18 innings pitched. Guess how many earned runs he gave up over those last 18 innings?
Zero.
Three.
Oh, okay.
Two home runs, three walks, 20 strikeouts over his last 18 innings, which constituted, like, I'm trying to count how many games it was because for some reason Fangraphs didn't do a total for me, but it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, like 21 or so games that he pitched in over the last 2 months of the year. I'll take three earned runs over 21 appearances.
Yeah, he's out there teaching everybody the split finger at this point.
Yeah, him and Gauze have just got to be in the locker room and just showing splitters, splitter, splitter, splitter. Everyone's throwing splitters now.
Yeah, and that's what's going to happen this year is some of the guys are going to introduce that
yeah.
pitch. Now, Alec Manoah is going a different direction, introducing a cutter. That's exciting.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about that.
I don't want to talk about it right now. We'll talk about it at a later time. But
we'll see how it goes in a game first before we talk about it.
What I love about Eric Swanson is that on paper, he's got like very average velocity.
Yeah.
But the control, oh my God.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
The splitter is one of the best in baseball. The four seamer is consistent. He has a game plan when he goes out there. He throws a lot of high heat, which is interesting. That's
a little high,
that's challenging.
And he uses his splitter up in the zone versus Gauze is down in the dirt, basically, yeah. too.
I think so. Gosman has to change it up a little bit this year because there are a few times where he kind of got put on blast by oppositional hitting.
Yeah.
Where they were like, yeah, I'm just not going to swing. I'll take the walk.
Look, Kevin Gausman's a guy who's been DFA'd a couple times in his career. I'm sure he knows that it's adapt or die. So I've got confidence there. But
yeah, and he will.
I like Eric Swanson, Patrick, because he could have come in last year and folded like a cheap tent. You know, like trading away a fan favorite in Teoscar Hernandez to the Seattle Mariners for Eric Swanson being the main piece of that deal. Fans came in really kind of looking for any excuse to shit on that trade. And after about the first month of the season, there were no, I don't think anybody was looking for excuses anymore. He quickly won over people by performance. He didn't win over people by talking. He let his play do the talking. And I mean, yeah, over a full season, his numbers are very, very good. And if you look at those games, like I highlighted down the stretch there, those last 20 or so appearances, he was not credited with any losses over that time. I think he was credited with a couple of wins. So you can say that, you know, Eric Swanson is definitely a big reason why this team made the playoffs last year. Not a reason why they lost in the playoffs, of course, but
the main reason why his analytics, or not his analytics, but his basic stats don't look better is the one time that he got tagged badly by the Dodgers on July 25th, where he gave up four runs. Other than that, the rest of his individual months were all elite caliber. Well, no, he wasn't really that great in April either. Because he had three starts in a row, or three appearances in a row where he got beat up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yankees, Orioles, that was like mid-May.
That was when the Jays couldn't pick up a win against the division.
Yeah, I know. And but
all season,
aside basically. From having those three bad starts and then the bad start against the Dodgers, every other appearance that he had was pretty strong.
Yep.
No notes. Eric Swanson Eric Swanson was as good as he's been most of his career, but he's still young, and I like him on this staff because if they need somebody to close and Romano's not available, it could be him.
I like that his family has a cabin in Manitoba. That's pretty cool. He spent a lot of time.
Yeah, I remember
But I also like the fact, Patrick, that he's a right-handed relief pitcher who gave up a 198 average to lefties.
Yeah.
And he faced 118 lefties last year. He actually has better splits against lefties than righties, even though he only gives up a 231 average to righties as well.
Yeah.
Man, he's just a very good pitcher. And I'm that's why we have him number one, I guess. You know, it's explanation is self-explanatory.
So just one other thing too, Bowden Francis went out for another inning there in the game against the Yankees, and he two strikeouts, he got three outs, two of them were strikeouts, so there you go, he bounced back, he's fine. It's hard to bat up against Verdugo, Soto, Judge, and Rizzo.
Everything is awesome
in his first again in your first inning of spring training. But anyway, whatever, spring training doesn't really matter. This is exciting. I think our lists aren't really like that dramatically off. I just think I have the Trevor Richards of it all probably bumped a bunch of guys around. So,
and I mean, look, you eventually said that Chad Green wasn't going to be in your top 11, and then you had to slot him in at 8.
Yeah,
I had him at 5. So I mean, that was a big difference.
I think he'll make the team. But it's the thing is,
he's definitely on the team.
Yeah, it's gonna come at the cost of like Mitch White, probably. Like, good. Mitch, I don't think Mitch White is gonna make this team. I think
that's probably for the best in that situation. Chad Green's a better pitcher than Mitch White, so.
Yeah, the thing is, it's gonna suck because that means Mitch White's probably gonna have to go through waivers, unless Bowden Francis doesn't make the team.
Yeah.
Which I would be very disappointed in.
It's gonna be interesting to see how this, even just our feelings evolve over the next couple of weeks between like those bottom four guys, even, you know, like maybe Mitch White comes out and strikes every batter he sees, and Bowden Francis doesn't do anything. He just throws up stinkers, you know, like he just does what he did in the first inning today. Just, yeah, we'll see. But I mean, we'll obviously be making more predictions and such as the preseason goes along here. But I thought this was an interesting experiment just based on all of the crazy takes I saw around Zulueta and Pearson having one bad spring appearance yesterday. So it was March 24th or February 24th, and Blue Jay fans were already blowing up, rebuilding the team on after one spring training game. So love to see it. I love Blue Jays Twitter. Never change. But I think that's probably it for us. Do you have any closing remarks you want to make?
No. I'm just excited to see how spring training goes. It'll be interesting if we do the same experiment with the 13 fielders.
Yeah, it's a little harder to do that for power rankings with them because they play different positions. I liked the I liked the bullpen aspect of it because it's kind of like a I base it off of like confidence and like in any situation more so than I mean, I guess you could do that in like, say, like, who would you want up with like the bases loaded and two outs or something and you're down a run. But I mean, I liked the bullpen aspect of it just for the fact that they are guys who don't play full time, you know, they come in specific situations and roles. So, yeah, but yeah, we'll definitely,
We'll have fun with it. We'll have fun with the preseason, back. We'll be back either in a few days or a week, whatever, if anything interesting happens. I don't know what they're going to do with third base, man. I don't want to talk about it anymore today, but I don't know. Is Matt Chapman going to come back?
I don't know, man.
Does this team live or die without Matt Chapman? I really don't want to. If this team misses the playoffs, I have a lot of.
There's going to be hell to pay in a lot of cases, I think, if this team misses the playoffs. But we'll find out.
I think Chappie's probably going to come back. But anyway.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Find out about 7 months from now at the end of September.
Yeah. All right.
Which is crazy. But that'll be it for us today. We'll be back at some point here in the coming week with more spring training news. And who knows? Maybe we'll think of other fun rankings or predictions to make as we get closer to our annual preseason prediction show, which will probably be about a month from now at this point. But if you like what we do, give us a follow at BFMD Podcast. Website is the same, bfmdpodcast.com. You can find us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please don't hesitate to leave us a review or send us a DM, an email, whatever it is, to give us some feedback. And if you have any fun suggestions for segments we can do on the show, or maybe some people you'd like to see us have on to interview, let us know. We'll do our best to oblige. But for Patrick out in Halifax, I am Justin here in Saskatoon, and we will see you next time.